Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 5th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to the Beer Amigos on Long Island for that awesome intro anthem. That's really cool. Hey, guess what? It's our 150th episode. That means we've been doing this every week almost for 3 years. And we've got some really cool guests that represent what's going on in New York City beer scene. First of all, yeah, baby! 3 years. I love this place. I love coming out to Roberta's in Bushwick. I love the heritageradionetwork.org. I'm a member. You can be a member, too. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. We love our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. 3 years with you guys. Thank you, babies. We love your beer, and we love what you guys do for beer. Go to greatbrewers.com. Learn more about beer. Take the Great Brewers Test 100. If you score 70 or higher, you will have beaten me. Guys, I got John Kleinchester, one of my favorite beer personalities. He's got this thing, hashtag beertography. If you're on Twitter, take a picture of the beer you're drinking, and you can be in a beer community with how many people check out hashtag beertography?
A lot, and I'm finding more every day that I don't even follow on Twitter, so it's great. Like, I think it's exploded past my reign, so it's like, it's a lot of fun.
It's really cool. You know, it's like, I always did it, but it was Hurricane Sandy, and I was like, I mean, I'm spoiled. I got to hang out in a bar in the East Village with draft beer and all these cool bottles. And I was home in Hurricane Sandy, and just me and that poor bottle of Sierra Nevada Torpedo or Lagunitas something. And I just said, I'm going to take a picture and send it to hashtag beertography on Twitter so I can, like, you know, hang out with my peers around the world. And it was cool.
It's a virtual hangout, and that's what makes it so much fun.
Yeah, now I do it all the time.
You know, it's always better for drinking alone. You know, it makes you feel like you're not drinking alone because other people will say, hey, that's cool. Look, cool photo. But, yeah.
How did you start that? I mean, we've talked about it before, but it's pretty awesome.
It just started because I was taking pictures of my own beer collection, whatever I was buying, and eventually I just started putting the pictures on a website, beertography.com, and then from there it just sort of evolved from there, and I started writing more about beer, and that's pretty much it.
You know, there's one woman from Texas who posted, and then it was like every three posts she was posting like a Bible verse. So I didn't know if she was really posting for beer or she was just trying to suck you in. I don't know. But that's Twitter. And then the new cool things from New York City. We've got Jason Seiler and Kyler. You guys got to say your names. Come on.
Yeah, Jason Seiler.
And Kyler Surface.
Seiler and Surface from the Kings County Brewers Collective.
Correct, yes.
So this is like the coolest thing going on. There's a great homebrew scene. You know, the West Coast has these different breweries, but I think New York City has one of the best homebrew scenes in America. You know, the Homebrew Alley from 5 years ago with 100 entries, which is now is over 800 entries this year. Mm-hmm. It's amazing the number of people in the New York area who are making homebrews. And you guys have been in the circle a long time. You've been part of Josh Bernstein's homebrew tours, our buddy Josh. Mm-hmm. First, let's just start. I'm going to interview you guys because you guys are really awesome. And how did you guys start making beer?
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's it's been a number of years. It's been about 8 years going on that I've been homebrewing. And it just came like doing kits with, you know, my brother and friends a long time ago. And then eventually it was, coming to New York City, there was a lot of, there wasn't much space. It was kind of trying to figure out how to brew in such a small space. And luckily, my wife ended up giving me a, you know, little 1 gallon beer kit, one of those little Brooklyn homebrew or Brooklyn brew shop kits that, as a wedding present. And it just really grew from there. Like, it was, coming back into it and like really exploring. And then I've been brewing ever since. It has been brewing like, weekly.
I'll give you guys some beer facts. New York City Beer Week's coming up, so I've been doing some research, and I went to the Brewers Association site. And, there's more breweries than ever, craft breweries than ever in America. Most of them actually are either brew pubs or microbreweries or in that subset, nano breweries. So it's kind of like people say, oh, there's no more room for craft beer to grow. It's like, not at all. I think there's, just last week I did a tour of four small breweries in New York City. I went out to Maspeth, Queens. I visited Bridge and Tunnel, which is brand new. I was in Long Island City with Rockaway Brewing, which is fairly new. I was at Five Way Gastropub with our good friend Chris Kuzme. And I was at Beercraft checking out their works because they're going to be a licensed brewery soon too. And these are all small places. I feel like that, you know, sometimes I'm frustrated. It's like, wow, there's a lot of beer and it's not always that good except for the really good stuff. But I feel like you guys are kind of taking control. It's like, well, then let's make a small brewery and make really good beer, right? Is that, yeah. And is that kind of what's behind your philosophy?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is definitely room for some growth and for some new interesting ideas. I think both Jason and I and John have been on the kind of the homebrew circuit for a while now and realized that it really is just taking the idea and putting it into action, into doing like what you love. And there's the niche for it, you know, out there, especially I think New York City is primed to still have some room for growth. There's, you know, there's tons of people here, as you know, and all of them starting to want to drink more and more craft beer. And I think us as homebrewers, we were just like, you know, this is what we love to do. We have to start brewing, you know, professionally. We have to do it on a commercial scale. And I think that's where I think when you start homebrewing, I think if you're really serious about it, like I've only been homebrewing for probably 3 years. But I dove in kind of head first. I made a really bad batch of beer, and then I couldn't take it. I was like, I have to make a better batch of beer, you know, and then started moving to all grain and stuff and just took off from there. Got a job at Brooklyn Homebrew. And now I'm here trying to, you know, go pro or whatever you
want. But you're still the future. It's like, you know, you want to have good beer and you can make it better yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you're talking about is the size of the brewery or the amount of breweries in this city. I mean, you look at Brooklyn alone, it's like, what, 2.5 million people? And there's three breweries in this borough. If you look at like a city like Portland or San Diego, there's 30 or so within the brewery limits or within the city limits. And, you know, there's what, I think 500,000 or so people in Portland, 1 million people or so in San Diego. I mean, there's plenty of people. I mean, you could open up tons of small little breweries all over the place in every neighborhood in Brooklyn. It would, you know, I think there's a possibility. There's lots of possibilities in the city.
People love local, and the more breweries there are, the better for all of us, I think. As long as everybody's making good beer, by all means, definitely. Why not? And I always think of Garrett Oliver's quote, which I love. He said that craft beer is not a trend, it's a return to normalcy. And that I'll never forget that, because that's just such a cool, and it really describes, you know, homebrewers coming up and making breweries that are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, alone for us at Jimmy's Number 43 for New York City Beer Week, I mean, we're going to have, in 1 week, we're going to have a small brewer's dinner with guys, Port Jeff on Long Island, Single Cut Beersmith, Five Awake Gastrobrewery, who else? Gosh. Rockaway and Horseheads, which is from Finger Lakes. Never heard of half of them. They're coming in. And then Wednesday, we've got Rockaway is going to release a new beer, a Scotch Ale. Thursday, we've got Rich from Bridge and Tunnel in Maspeth, Queens, coming in with two beers. And Saturday, we've got Kelso, you know, with some rare beers. And that's just like one little thing, you know. It's kind of amazing. I mean, I'm so psyched. Let's raise our glasses, because I mean, it's cool. I want to talk about New York City Beer Week too, because it is a really important part of New York City beer scene, and it's morphed. You know, there's finally the New York City Brewers Guild, and as you guys become, you know, commercial, you can join that. And you know, just a few years ago, what, there were only like maybe five breweries in New York City, and there's going to be over 13 soon. So I mean, is that whole movement? You guys are excited about that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're really excited about it. So we didn't mention it, but we're trying to, our concept here is to, Jason and I and a few other guys, is to kind of start a Brewers Collective, Kings County Brewers Collective. And our goal is to kind of have a few different brands under one umbrella, basically brewing in the same brew house, but, you know, with, you know, brainstorming together on what cool beers to do or what seasonal beers to do together, and then still have our core flagship brands to hopefully in a way kind of incubate our brands and possibly branch out in the future. But our goal to start off with is to, you know, make the beer scene better by just having more diversity, you know, trying some really weird beers that you might, that a commercial, in a commercial setting, you know, aren't feasible. You know, there's very few breweries that want to do 100% Brett beer, for risk of contamination, for risk of, you know, loss of respect to their brewery if people don't understand it, you know, but we can kind of, hopefully the goal is we can get away with that, in our collective space that we're trying to create.
Yeah. I mean, really one of the ideas of the collective is to act as a place that, you know, we can, I mean, it's, you know, five homebrewers that want to take the next step. You know, we don't have the financial backing, you know, a lot of other people do. So it, it, you know, it's really us trying to get a kind of a groundswell and trying to, you know, do that from our own pockets and really just start this thing that, that can really, you know, we can share in the, not only in the risks and the financial responsibilities of starting a brewery, but something where we can also share in the knowledge base, in the technical, you know, knowledge and the professional, and also the creative aspects of each of us brewers working together and like trying to create a you know, a unique atmosphere for us to work in. But they can also branch out and do things for the community in terms of teaching people about beer and, you know, doing certain types of like clubs where, you know, it's like a kind of like a mug club or a community supported brewery, also doing different classes and things where we can really, you know, showcase what beer is about or craft beer is about.
Are you guys, so then you're going to have your own facility, right? Not
yes.
Contracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Oh, definitely. Awesome. Definitely. I mean, it's really kind of, you know, we've all, cause we're all five of us have kind of looked at, you know, the different aspects of what it would take to start a brewery. And some of us thought about, you know, contract or, you know, partnership brewing or starting, you know, a completely small nano. So it's, there's been a lot of different ideas and, you know, this allows us to work together. It's not the smallest nano. It's still going to be a small brewery because there's, you know, it's still really expensive, but it allows us to do it at this, you know, level together, you know, and really kind of work together and create this, this great brewery destination where people can come and try the beers and learn about the beers and learn just about beer in general.
So. Awesome idea. Cool. It's an awesome idea.
Yeah. And so, and Connor, you have been teaching beer classes at Brooklyn Homebrew, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what I've been doing recently, teaching a beginner and all grain classes. I'm going to probably pass the torch soon to a new teacher, but we're trying to revamp the whole curriculum. We've had a yeast class that is like just crazy popular, and I think they're trying to work that in a little bit more because people really want to learn about that. I'm going to be teaching an IPA class, I think, coming up, and we're looking to do some really interesting new things at Brooklyn Homebrew and teach some, get some more knowledge out there rather than just the basic brewing process.
So what are some of the other really good places for people to learn about beer in Brooklyn? I mean, Brooklyn Homebrew is great.
Definitely.
Is that really the epicenter? Or do you think the homebrew, what are some of the good homebrew clubs out in Brooklyn?
Homebrew clubs, I want to shout out, definitely Brooklyn Bruisers. That's my crew. It's my club. We meet at Brewery Lane, the first Monday of every month. I think a few of us are going to go to Malted Barley Appreciation Society coming up.
Where's that? That's at Mugs
Ale House. Yeah. The first or second Wednesday. That's probably the longest running homebrew club. Yeah. Then there's, of course, the New York City Homebrewers Guild, which just, made a great showing with Homebrew Alley. That shit was
and Burt
awesome.
Castle, right? In East Burt, Village, yeah.
Yep. And then they just hosted Homebrew Alley, which was a total blast. John just blew it up. Got some gold medals and stuff.
Just one.
But yeah, there were some great beers. And
tell me that, we're going to take a short break. We have to take a break. Cool. When we come back, I'm going to get the highlights of the Homebrew Alley, okay? We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Cheers.
This one's called Someone Like You by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a great show. It's our 150th anniversary episode.
There we go.
3 years. And we're going to celebrate it in New York City Beer Week on Wednesday, February 27th. It's going to be our third annual New York City Brewer's Choice that we produce. Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger curated over 25 top brewers from the Northeast. Nice. And you guys are coming. I'm inviting the Kings County Brewers Collective. You guys are coming on the house. I might even make you guys make beer on the stage.
All right. We'll be there.
But it really is. It'll be the third year. It's the best event of Beer Week. And there's food. It's at City Winery in the village. And it's a night of, we call it a beer industry night, because every brewer is there pouring their best stuff. And it's not your typical beer fest. We've got stemware glasses, and it's a nice night out. We've got oysters, we've got really good food, and you can still buy tickets, NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. Alright, well, you guys brought some beer. Let's talk about beer. First, I was drinking the Firestone Pale Ale 31. It's on tap all the time here at Roberta's. I love it. It's great. You know, it's got like this citrusy hops. It's like, I call it easy IPA. What do you think of it,
Josh? It was really fantastic. I've actually never had it before. I don't know how I've missed it up until now, but yeah, no, I really like it. I don't know if you know the ABV. Do you happen to know?
It's like 5-something.
Yeah, it seems very pretty sessionable. Still good quality hoppiness.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of the West Coast breweries like them, and Green Flash introduced a thing called East Village Pilsner. They've got these like more easy drinking beers coming out here. I like session beers.
Yeah. You need them for certain days.
On hashtag beertography, do you ever track the beers that people send in with their photos? Or is this all over the place?
It's all over the place. Cool. I mean, I've gotten macro beers checked in with beertography too, so I can't, you know, I'll try to coax them towards craft beer, but it's sort of, you know, it's become a thing of its own at this point.
Yeah. No, there's so many good beers to choose from. And so we're talking about New York City beer scene. The great homebrew alley has grown so much from 100 submissions to over 800 people submitted beer this year. And you guys were all there. The judging just happened this past weekend at Alewife in Queens. Let's do a rundown. John, tell us about homebrew alley.
You'd like the whole thing?
It's pretty massive.
Yeah, sure, why massive. Not? Well, the biggest story at the beginning of it was the snowstorm that hit on Friday, because the judging was supposed to start. I wasn't part of the judging or anything, but this was all me just trying to gear up to be there for the award ceremony. They ended up having a little bit of trouble getting judges in, and you could probably speak more to this since you were stewarding, but they ended up waiting to do the ceremony until Sunday night instead of Saturday, so...
Yeah,
it's a little crazy.
The snowstorm.
Over 800, was it 800 brewers or 800 beers?
It was right around. It was just under. I think it was 770 when all
770 beers.
770 beers, which, you know, is just under 1600 actual bottles of beer, because you have to submit 2 bottles in case your beer is good enough that it goes on to Best in Show. They need another bottle to pop open, so we had to organize that on Thursday night when the snowstorm was coming. So it was like maybe 10 of us just schlepping all these cases of bottles downstairs and then labeling them. And it was a huge operation. I've entered Homebrew Alley for the past 2 years, and I thought this was the year that I should probably help out, because I've been making these people work for free, basically. I mean, you pay for your entries, but... So it was just a massive undertaking. I had no idea that it was so intense.
So how many prizes were given? And who won? I mean, you guys, did everybody walk with prizes?
So the controversy is, so we were saying John got a, so there's 23 categories, and usually every category gets a first, second, and third place, unless they deem one category not having enough, like there's not 3 beers that are worthy of medals. So there's usually 23 medals plus some extra ones for like mead and cider and combinations thereof. The big controversy this year, was that a ghost pepper chili mead won Best in Show.
I want to try that right now.
I heard that it was incredible.
You mean Best in Show for the entire event?
For the entire thing. And then second place Best in Show was a cider, and third place Best in Show was an American pale ale that was gluten free. So no quote unquote beers won Best in Show in a beer competition. A little controversial, but they were all incredible.
I'll say this. There's a new brewery up in Finger Lakes called Horseheads Brewery. Mm-hmm. And the favorite beer that they make that I like is called Hallaheim. So it's jalapeno and Anaheim peppers, mm-hmm. but it's done right where their nose, you can smell the green mm-hmm. peppers, and then it's like this just subtle hint. It's not even spiciness, but it's just like, you know, to an effect. to replace what hops does, you know, and it's mm-hmm. it was it's a good beer. So I'm going back in history, I'm into beers with ginger and dandelion and other stuff. So I don't think, you know, not having hops or adding other things to hops isn't bad beer. But I think that people are maybe just starting to figure out what people used to know, you know. So what we were saying, give us that Garrett Oliver quote again, because that was pretty awesome.
Craft beer is not a fad or a trend. It is a return to normalcy. Which
yeah, and people used to use a lot of other ingredients besides hops. So. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, going way back, yeah.
All right, a quick rundown. So did you win an award, John? Tell us the beer you made and what you won.
I did. I made a Belgian double, and I won in the Belgian Strong Ale category, Category 18.
So Homebrew Alley, the big New York City homebrew competition.
Very excited.
Kyler, did you win something?
I did. I won a gold medal with my Doppelbock that I brought for us
Jason,
to try.
Anything?
Of course you'd leave me last. I did not win anything this time.
He won a participation medal.
I won, second place.
You're too quiet over there. Well, guess what? We've got a call-in guest. There's a thing that you've been a big part of, John Kleinchester. It's called Pints for Prostates.
You got it.
It's kind of scary. We don't want to talk about that stuff because we're all young men. But, hey, John, and your guest is Rick Like. Rick, how are you?
Hey, guys. Rick. I'm doing great. How are things up your way?
Great. Tell us about Pints for Prostates and how you got involved with that.
Pints for Prostates is an organization that uses the universal language of beer to reach guys. And my involvement started back in late 2007 when I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I have written about beer for about 30 years. I've written for All About Beer, some of the Brewing News publications, Draft, a few other magazines, and just decided after I had my surgery that, beer and guys go together pretty well, and unfortunately beer and prostate cancer and guys go together. So we use the universal language of beer to reach men.
Nice. All right. And I know, John, you organized an event for Pints for Prostates recently.
Yes.
So where was that, and, you know, where does the money go to?
Basically, I organized an event at Barcade in Jersey City. I live right around the corner from there, so what better place than your local watering hole? Jimmy, we should talk about doing one at your place. and basically, Barcade was really generous. They had a keg of Founders KBS. They offered up for the event, and that's an immediate draw for beer geeks, as everybody knows. So we did guaranteed reserved pours. For $5, you can sign up online, minimum $5 to get a reserved pour, and you didn't have to show up right at the beginning of the event. You can come anytime in between the hours, and you would get a guaranteed pour of KBS. That was like the main draw, and then on top of that, we sold these wristbands at the door for $1 each. That also went towards the total. We also sold other merchandise and raffle tickets for this big, Rick could probably talk more about this big Europe trip that they do every year through Pints for Prostates. And then on top of that, Barcade donated $1 of every beer bought during those hours. And so we ended up with a total of over $1,200.
That's great.
For a Sunday in September. It was awesome.
So, hey, Rick, so you're doing this around the country?
Yeah, and you know, the support. I mean, John coming forward and the folks at Barcade and craft brewers, I mean, just, you know, really generous in supporting our efforts. And we do these events like this around the country. We've been from Boston to Seattle doing events in bars and brew pubs. We also go to a lot of beer festivals. We go to the Great American Beer Festival every year. We go to several of the World Beer Festivals, some other events, and we also hold our own events. We're the folks behind the Denver Rare Beer Tasting out in Denver during GABF Week. So we get just a tremendous amount of support from brewers who are willing to donate special kegs of beer and show up for our events, which really draws beer fans in. And we use that opportunity to talk to them about the fact that prostate cancer is 100% curable if it's detected early enough. And most guys just don't know enough about the disease. I was only 47. I always thought that it was a disease that impacted men when they were in their 70s. And, you know, the critical thing is have early detection, you have a lot of options for treatment, and you have good outcomes. So that's the message we try to bring as we go around and do these events.
Rick, that's awesome. I took the test once. I know what it is. You have to stand in. Let me say this on there. You have to pee, and they kind of measure how hard you pee or something. But I know, it's believe me, we're all scared of it. But so what does the money go to? It's mostly going to research? Velocity, thank you.
Well, you know, what we do, our primary goal is awareness. Fundraising is sort of secondary. But money that we raise, we put back to work in some of the awareness things. The folks who help us, like myself and John and others, we're all volunteers. So the money that we do make, we put back into awareness. We also support two groups. One is a group called the Prostate Conditions Education Council, and they do free testing clinics for men around the country. So we help fund some of those. And the other group that we help is a group called the US2 Prostate Cancer Support and Education Network, and they do counseling for newly diagnosed men and guys who have later stages of the disease and are going through different levels of treatment. So we try to help guys who are facing this disease.
That's great, Rick. It's really awesome. Stay on the air with us. We're going to talk about a couple other things too. We were joking about the Pope. The Pope's got, you know, you got to pick a new Pope in this country or whatever, the Vatican, not in this country.
But is there a Pope?
I was telling that you guys should do this, and I'm serious about this because I like to do a lot of events. You should do your next series called Pints for Popes, and for real, like I think you guys can put add a little humor to it because I know it's a serious issue and everybody needs to learn about it. But let's do some Pints for Popes, and we'll give all the money to Pints for Prostrates.
Do it around the conclave that they do.
Yeah, for real. Come
on. We could have white smoke go up whenever there's great beer, you know, taps or something, right?
That's exactly. Let's have some fun with it, you know. But thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. So we're talking now. You can listen, and we're talking about this great homebrew, you know, happening in New York City, Homebrew Alley that just happened, and. You know, there's no news about this stuff. I mean, there's over 800 beers submitted for this amazing homebrew event, and I didn't see results posted or anything. I mean, how can I find out who won Homebrew Alley?
I think it's on homebrewalley.org. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think the link is on that main page there. If you look there, it'll give you the whole list of everybody.
Yeah. But we're fine here. Like the future, you know, in New York is all you great homebrewers who've really learned your craft, and you know, you're going to have this awesome Kings County Brewing Collective. I want to be part of that. I want to hang out with you guys.
You can be an honorary member.
Are you guys going to have education too?
We're going to have education. You mean as far as classes and stuff? Yeah, that's one of the goals is to, you know, educate the local community and probably homebrewing specifically, but maybe some style classes. You know, that pertains to the...
And let's talk about the beers. I mean, I just tasted two really great beers. So the first one was a little lighter. What was that?
That was my Kolsch. That's my take on a German-style Kolsch.
That was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks. It's super refreshing, easy to drink. It's a fun beer to brew.
What was the second beer? It was a little richer.
Yeah, that I shouldn't have opened that just yet, but that was my barley wine.
Jumped the gun.
Yeah, I didn't have anything light here. Sorry. it's been aging about a year. Me and my buddy Jeff brew a barley wine once a year, every year to commemorate like starting homebrewing, like, you know, almost like a New Year's thing. So this is number 5 actually. We out of all of the anniversary beers, but it's been aging almost a year now, so. It's a little oxidized, but I think it's pretty...
It's nice. It's a nice beer. Super super malty. And Jason was just about to pour some beer, I think. He's got some... He brought some stuff.
I got a wee heavy that we can... a Scottish
wee heavy. Let's pop it, Jason. That sounds good.
Yeah, we'll start... Go big or go home, right?
And then, Rick, I just want to say that I know what you're doing is so important, and I feel a little uncomfortable talking about Pints for Prostates, and I'm scared of it myself, but like I said, let's do an event called Pints for Popes and have some fun with it, because... I know that you're doing the right thing, and you know, down the road we drink a lot of beer. You know, we're all gonna. And you know, Joe Torre, listen, this is serious stuff, and I want to make it serious. And I know you're doing something really important. And you know, here in New York, Joe Torre a few years ago dealt with prostate cancer, and you know, he advocated for green tea. But I know it's something really tough for people. So I'm really proud of you and that you've created this campaign. And I know from John. A bunch of us are going to host Pints for Prostates events, coming up in New York City. I got a feeling that it's going to be the new thing. So thanks so much, Rick. Thanks for coming on, okay? All right. Anyways, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
It's too heavy for me.
This one's called DD by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. .org. .info? HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio and the Heritage Radio Network. You know, you should all check out heritageradionetwork.org. You should become a member. There's some really cool shows. Hey, Cooking Issues with Dave Arnold. You want to learn about everything you can do in the kitchen and more. There's cheese shows, farm shows, Farm Report with Aaron Fairbanks. I really love this network. We have listeners from England to Michigan to Florida to California. And I think most people actually listen to one or two or three or four shows, and we're really proud to be here at Heritage Radio Network. All right, we got a great show tonight. We're talking with the hip guys from the Kings County Brewers Collective. Guys, let's pump it up. Come on. So who else is in the collective? I mean, this is what it should be. You guys are going to put in some money, and so what size system are you guys going to start with? You must have some plans, right?
Actually, we're still keeping it pretty small because we want to be able to be adaptive and kind of be able to function with multiple brewers doing a lot of different things. So the idea right now is looking at a 3.5-barrel to 7-barrel system. So we're still playing around, looking at, you know, what exactly would work, what exactly, you know, we can find in Brooklyn in terms of space, and what can work in terms of that, you know, that actual location. But we want to be able to have a lot of different brewers, or, you know, 5 different brewers, be able to brew and, you know, be a, you know, a constant rotation of things.
Get a lot of different beer styles, a lot of different takes on beers, and hopefully some experimental stuff. We definitely plan to do a few collaborations with all of the brands combined into one, all 5 brewers. But to answer your question, who else is in the collective? I guess we're quintessentially the most public so far, because a few of the members work at breweries currently, so they don't want to release their names.
Let's say your names again on the air. Come on.
So my name's Kyler Surface,
and I'm Jason Saylor. We're also the best looking.
Yeah, that's why they put us on radio. They were like, "You're the best looking one, so you should show up to this radio show." So.
And there was another gentleman, Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, Ryan McMahon was gonna be here, but unfortunately,
he has a real job.
He has a real job that unfortunately took precedent. And then we have another guy, Tony Bellis, who is out of the country right now in India. And then we have a fifth brewer who is currently remaining anonymous.
Ghost member.
Ghost member.
But all right. That reminds me, I definitely wanted to give a shout out to the dudes at Beeraria. We just
Beeraria.
Beeraria. They gave us they said they were going to be listening today, so we didn't want to make them look like fools, but they gave us they're running as you probably know, or may or may not know, they have a super tiny 3.5-barrel system on a rooftop in Manhattan, and they have about 600 square feet to get their pump their brews out, and they do all cask ales, and it was just fantastic. They let us like kind of tag along for a brew day, you know, see how they run things. You know, they have to take some shortcuts because of their space, but it was a blast. And there,
John, great guys. Have you been up to Beeraria?
Yes, I have. Beeraria.
It's kind of a beautiful. It's like kind of like this perfect little mini brewery.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing.
It was pretty sweet.
The views are amazing. The beer is really good, and yeah, it's pretty much the best place.
We had a really, really special, spectacular beer that they got the yeast. I think it was spearheaded by Sam from Dogfish Head. It was the yeast was cultivated, I guess, from the belly of a hornet or something, belly of a wasp.
Sounds like Sam.
Yeah, and it was crazy, but it was, all the beers are delicious. It was just a blast to be a part of that. Was Pete and Ben.
Pete and Ben.
Betania.
Now, this scene's so cool. So you think that the system they have at Birria, the 3.5-barrel system, I mean, that makes a lot of beer. I mean, how many kegs a week can you make from that? It's 3.5 barrels. That's like 7 kegs at a time.
Kegs at a time. And they're usually double batching to fill up because they have 2 7-barrel fermenters. So they're getting...
How many kegs a week could they put out there?
Probably about 14. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're... 28, mm-hmm. I guess would be...
That's a lot of beer, you know? That's what we're talking about before. It's like the Brewers Association. I mean, with the brew pubs and nanobreweries and microbreweries. I mean, you don't need to make that much beer to have a nice little brewery.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big shift in America, and I love seeing that happen in New York.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's pretty awesome.
I think the big the thing with going with a nano is usually that I think the tasting room is super important, which essentially their restaurant is the tasting room. You know, they're pushing all of their beers. They do all cask ales, so they're doing them in firkins, but they don't distribute any of their beer, so they're pushing it all through the restaurant, and that's just, you know, straight.
You know, whatever people say about New York, one thing about New York State, they have some really great licenses for brewing, and the secret license is called Restaurant Brewery License. Hmm. And I know that's what Birria has, 508 Gastrobrewery has it, mm-hmm. and Beercraft is going to do the same, and it allows you to make beer for sale on premise. And, you know, that's kind of the future. If you really like making, it's like making soup or something else. We've got a call-in guest. I wanted to give an intro. You know, we had Hurricane Sandy in New York. We have prostate cancer. We've got Hurricane Sandy. There's always bad things going on, but we know what? We're going to have a lot of fun drinking beer. But one of the highlights of Hurricane Sandy was this great beer that Omegang Brewery made in collaboration with Barrier called Omegang Barrier Relief. Mm. And we just got a call in here. There's another really great beer coming out in New Jersey from Flying Fish. And is there someone from Flying Fish on the phone right now?
Yeah, this is Gene from Flying Fish. How you doing, guys?
Hey, Gene, how are you? You know John Kleinchester from Beertography?
Hey, Gene.
I do not.
Yeah, he's kind of a Jersey guy. But tell us about what...
Believe it or not everybody in Jersey knows each other. It's a small state, but not that small.
I don't believe that.
Well, tell us about you have a special beer that's going to raise money for Sandy. Why don't you tell us about it, Gene?
Yeah, well, after the storm, I mean, we were fortunate. We're in a new brewery we just moved into in September, and we kind of got through pretty unscathed. We're down more in the southern area, but a lot of friends and a lot of customers and a lot of people we know got slammed pretty hard. So we wanted to do something, and, you know, we just got the new brewery commissioned, and we thought, okay, well, let's do what we do best and make a beer. So what we did was brew a special beer, and then... charged, we came up with 86 kegs, and we charged $500 a keg to raise as much money as possible. So that'll generate $43,000 that we're going to give every penny to. We're donating everything, and we'll be donating that to some Jersey based charities for the rebuilding effort. And beer just started shipping. It's going to be getting tapped this week. Most of the tappings will be this Saturday. And the website flyingfish.com has a list of kind of sort of accurate of who's got it and when they're going to be tapping it.
Wow, I'm looking at the list right now. I mean, you're covering like entire Jersey. So Somerdale, where is Somerdale, New Jersey?
Somerdale is in Camden County. We're a couple miles from like Cherry Hill, which is where the old brewery was.
Are you the largest brewery in New Jersey?
Yeah, we're still pretty small. I mean, last year we did 15,000 barrels about, and but yeah, we're of the 25 in the state, we're by far the largest at this point.
Well, I would love to taste this beer. So you've got some great things going on. So let's think about near New York City. Where can I get your beer? I'm looking at the Jersey City.
We are not in New York. Jersey City? We're pretty Jersey-centric. We distribute within 100 miles, so we're... New Jersey, Eastern PA, Delaware, and Maryland, but we are not in New York yet.
Gene, I think you. If I think I saw the list, you're going to be at Barcade, Jersey City. No.
Yes.
Yes. So, Jimmy, that's a quick trip on the path.
Easy.
And you can crash on my couch if you want.
And we're also Hoboken. I think Texas, Arizona. I don't have the web up at the moment, but there's a good selection throughout the state.
Well, it's really awesome. I mean, Tell us some of your feelings about Hurricane Sandy. I mean, you know, you guys made this great project. So, you know, tell us, talk about it. Come on.
Well, we, like I said, we got through pretty unscathed, but there are people who've had houses in their families for generations and never had an issue and wound up with 2 feet of water. And, you know, there's just, I mean, everybody's seen the pictures, the devastation. So, like I said, we're pretty Jersey-centric, and, you know, we do the whole exit series of beers based on the Turnpike. So, you know, we wanted to do whatever we could do to help. So, like I said, we do what we do best, and that's brew
Gene,
beer.
I go down to K-Main, New Jersey a lot. Exit Zero, have you made an Exit Zero beer yet?
That's the Parkway. We're the Turnpike. We did Exit One.
It's
we did
different.
Oyster Stout with Oysters in Delaware Bay. Exit 16, which everybody said was that a Jimmy Hoffa beer, but we worked with the Hackensack River Keepers, and we used, wild rice, not grown there, but originally there was wild rice there, so we did a wild rice double IPA, which was really fun.
And where else do you sell besides New Jersey?
Pardon me?
Where else do you sell besides New Jersey?
Eastern Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland.
I've heard about you guys
for a long
time.
We're pretty much within 100 miles of the brewery. Once we get this new facility up and running, we will probably expand a little bit. But we really want to, you know, the whole new brewery is based on sustainability. And, you know, beer's heavy, and it costs a lot of money and fuel to ship it. And you're putting out a lot of CO2. So, you know, when I travel, the best thing is to try find what's local, what's fresh. So we really want to kind of, you know, stay with that you know, kind of keep the beer as local as we can.
Hey, this is Jason here. I just was wondering, what do you do in terms of sustainability for the brewery? I've just always been interested in that.
Well, we've done a bunch of stuff. We have a building that was built in the late 60s. It was originally a pressing plant for Motown Records, and then it became a couple of other things. It's a little tired, but for starters, from the top down, we have the whole roof is filled with solar panels. We also have solar light tubes, which are collect sunlight and beam them into the brewery, so it's passive lighting. We have rain gardens to collect the storm water so that it's not rushing off into, we have a stream down behind us that eventually makes its way into the Delaware River. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of energy efficient lighting for our new tasting room. The great thing is New Jersey just got a law passed, or the brewers did, that will allow us to do things similar that you can do in New York and Pennsylvania and Delaware, and that's you come in, take a tour, we can sell you a pint of beer, you can buy beer to go. So our tasting room is going to use, we have a big old water tower outside that we took down. We're going to reclaim that wood, use that for the bar. Basically, wherever we can, you know, reuse or adapt, that's what we're designing around.
Hey, Gene, would you guys do a big pint for prostates event at your brewery in Flying Fish? For real.
Once we get the tasting room open, we can talk. Right now, we're living in a construction site. We're trying to run the brewery and run a construction site, and it's like every day you come in and there's dust everywhere. So we're hoping by...
for real, when you're ready, a bunch of us will come down, because we've been talking about that tonight, and we'd love to come down and check out your brewery. And
I said, we're hopeful that... you know, May, June time frame, we will be up and running with the tasting room and, most importantly, the draft system and all that good stuff.
Gene, what was the name of the beer again for the Sandy relief?
It is Forever Unloved Sandy, and some people abbreviate it to F.U. Sandy.
Some people.
Awesome.
That's great.
And Gene, outside of Flying Fish, what's your favorite beer that you like? That's a tough question.
Generally, I like what's local. I mean, you know, if I'm out in Oregon, I'm a big fan of Deschutes or, Colorado. I mean, I always look for Odell's. Wherever I travel, I just, you know, and there's so many breweries out there now. There's, you know, I've been in the industry for 20 years, and I go into the store, and I'm like, I've never heard of some of these guys. So it's, it's a never-ending quest, which makes it fun.
We'll put you on the spot. What's your favorite East Coast beer?
Favorite East Coast beer?
Besides yours.
I mean, you know, the Philly beer scene is pretty tight. We're all pretty friendly, so I'll drink, Victory or Yards or, some of the Dogfish, just whatever, you know, I like it all, you know.
Smoking like a true diplomat.
Gene, you're good, and guess what? We're going to get you up here in Brooklyn one day soon, all right? And let's just go through the line. John Kleinchester, John, what was your favorite beer from the weekend?
From the weekend?
Come
on,
man.
Any of the beers I had at Homebrew Alley, they were all amazing.
Pick one.
I don't know. Kyler's.
Homebrew Alley. Right. Jason, favorite beer from the weekend?
I had Victory Headwaters. That was it was pretty good.
I like that beer.
Yeah.
And Kyler?
I had... Oscar Norlander's Frambois. He had a sour, like, I guess it's raspberry? Sour raspberry lambic or something? It was incredible.
Yeah.
It
and was. I was drinking some weird French beers. The Bretagne Celtica, a Belgian strong ale imported by the Shelton Brothers. We had like a French and Quebec beer weekend.
Nice.
Isn't that crazy?
Nice.
Life is crazy.
There you go.
All right. Hey, guys, let's give a shout out. And Gene, thanks so much for joining us because we're going to hang out with Flying Fish. I like your beers.
Cool.
And, all right.
And for your folks, your listeners, you know, like I said, if you want to look up Sandy, just kind of stay tuned to our website. We keep updating as bars will tell us when they're going to tap it. But it's flyingfish.com.
All right. And thanks again. And we're hosting the New York City Brewer's Choice on February 27th, a featured event of New York City Beer Week. Go to goodbrewseal.com for more info. And also, if you'd like to read about beer and buy beer books, we've had a lot of authors and great books featured on Beer Sessions Radio over the last 3 years. Now you can find a comprehensive list of authors and their books, plus links to purchase them at goodbrewseal.com. Okay, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal. Thanks to John, Jason, Kyler, and Rick for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Woo!
All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.